I'd like to call to order the town council meeting of August 13th and invite you all to say the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I have no changes to the agenda. Do any council members have any changes? No? Take a motion to approve the agenda.
Move approval of the agenda as submitted.
Second. Moved and seconded to approve the agenda. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Have you all had a chance to review the minutes of our regular meeting of July 23rd?
Yes.
Any changes or corrections to those minutes?
Mayor, I...
Kelly has one, I think.
I'll do...
Well, everybody's talking at once. You go first, Kelly.
On page 2, at the bottom of page 2, cancel regular council meeting scheduled for July 9th was actually part of June's minutes, so it needs to be removed from these minutes.
That council action?
Yes.
Okay.
And I found a few typos, but that was the main thing. On the first page, the third bullet under the mayor's report, Lions without an apostrophe, and the second line in that bullet, the organization uses this money. And on the next page, top line, Mayor Hughes reminded the council about the Arts Festival. And at the bottom of the page 2, Law and Justice Council met in the library. And under the discussion on page 3, provided guidance about 4 lines down. I'm just in my proofreader mode.
Wow.
Wait, what, did you get the last one, Kelly?
I did.
Okay. Anybody else?
Well, could we follow that?
Okay, and I'll take a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll move to approve the minutes as amended.
Second.
Moved and seconded to approve the minutes of our July 23rd meeting as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes unanimously. Thank you. Okay, now I will move into my mayor's report. And I am happy, I want to introduce you all to Jenny Bright. Stand up, Jenny, in the back. Jenny is the person that has put her name on the ballot to run for Catherine Ballet's position this fall when Catherine is retiring after 4 years of great service to the town. And so Jenny will be joining us next year, and I will be inviting her this fall to all of our really exciting budget workshops and meetings, so she can maybe get a little bit of a head start on how the town runs. Thank you. I'm glad you're here tonight with us.
Welcome.
Okay. So I hope you all saw a couple weeks ago that the Whitby News Times did a great article about our turning on the new water plant. There was a cute picture of Joe in there. And did I already tell you about this? When Maura Guido was out doing the interview, doing the article, she lives in Coopville. And so Joe pulled water straight out of the tank for her to taste. And she like you know, reporters are very objective, don't show emotion. Her eyes got big and she said, I can really taste the difference in this water. So that was really fun. And she did a really great article on the whole process and the treatment and everything, so that was good. And then the following week, Congressman Larson came out with Captain Arnie. He had made a request to see the plant because he knows about it. So he went out there and got the whole tour. Kendra, our project manager with the Navy, was there, and Joe did the same thing and pulled out some water for him to drink. And of course, he has nothing to compare it to, but he thought it was good. So that was fun. Our toilet paper cutting ceremony, and to initiate our new, to celebrate our new restrooms, followed by parking lot cake at the farmer's market, was a lot of fun. We had about maybe 40 or 50 people show up for the toilet paper cutting. 40.
Maybe 30.
Well, there, okay, so there was like 30 that were there intentionally, that came intentionally, and by the time the ceremony was over, people that were walking by stopped to see what on earth is going on here. But we passed out Mike and Jackie stayed at the booth in the farmer's market with me and helped cut cake and pass out Hot Wheel cars to the kids, and it was fun. Pat came, thank you for coming.
And I went around and got all the kids to come over.
Good. We had a lot of kids. They all got Hot Wheels. I had a very quick and real brief meeting on the fly with Mike Desert, who's the president of the Arts and Crafts Festival Association. He was very happy with the festival. I had checked in with the first responders and with Marshall Warwick, and there was no major incidents, no injuries for all of that number of people in town. Everything went really well. Lots of great volunteers. They had volunteers from NET and from Races Radios and from the Cooper Lions, and at the last minute, they got a big group of Navy sailors to help on Friday setup and Sunday teardown. That was like a big bonus surprise, and really, especially on teardown, helped them get a lot more done Sunday night than normal. And so, you know, they're exhausted on Monday morning coming in to finish that up, and they were just very happy to have so much of it done already. Great weather for the weekend. I haven't really, you know, it'll be a while before we hear sales results from the weekend, but that'll be pretty quick.
After the downpour.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, and but it seemed like I was told that people just poured into town around 1 o'clock when the sun came out. Lots of great compliments on the paved parking lot, yes, as far as a setting for the food vendors and the entertainment.
Yeah, wonderful.
And how that all just felt cleaner and nicer, and they did a completely different setup of the food, of where you sat to eat your food and where you could sit and watch the music, and you could see the entertainment from both of those areas for the first time. So it was just really nice. Everybody seemed really happy. Another great arts and crafts festival under our belt. Oh, and the Pagans in the Park. No problems with the Pagans in the Park. So there was about 6 canopies set up in the park, and they just did their own thing, and that event was open to the public. I went up there a couple times. I didn't see a lot of people up there, but everybody was having a good time up there too. Okay, I have a little bit of disappointing news to share with you. I've already shared this with the Chamber and the Cookeville Historic Waterfront Association. You know we've been having problems this year with our getting our street work done with our Transportation Improvement Board grants. So because the county is not doing those jobs for us, and we found that out late, we had to do a couple extra steps of approval that we normally don't have to do. So we finally got it all together, and we sent in all of our paperwork for the first step of approval, and what that is an approval to go out to bid. And the Transportation Improvement Board is not giving us that approval for this year, because it's too late in the season. They go by the WASDOT manual, and they've got these hard and fast dates that no paving can start after, I believe it's October 1st, and no paving is supposed to start before April 15th. We are absolutely not gonna lose our grant money. We have 2 years to use that grant money. We always have used it in the first year, so this will be unusual for us. But the good news is, we talked to them about it a lot, and they are not going to ask us to take this year's jobs and try to get the county to do them for us, which means they wouldn't happen until the late summer of 2020. They will allow us to go out to bid on the overlay of South Main and the Alexander sidewalk. So our schedule with them that we've agreed to is in January, we will resubmit all the paperwork, which is basically approval to go out to bid, which is all done. That paperwork's all ready to go, it's in a package. In February, we'll go out to bid with proposals due at the end of the month. In March, we will award the bid and set a construction schedule. And then April 15th is apparently a magic date that things can't start until April 15th. But our plan is to have a contractor online and be all ready to go the minute the weather is good enough for them to do that. We will let the contractor know about 2 critical dates, Waterfest and Memorial Day Parade in May. And so we will make sure that they can either be done or work around those, or, you know, we'll see what the weather is like. And that's about it. So disappointed we're not getting the work done this year, but we absolutely are not losing the grant money, and we will get it done early in the year.
Is it them requiring us to resubmit in January?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just a matter of mailing it to them again.
Yeah.
They approve it really quickly.
Okay.
They told us to resubmit in February or March, and I go, yeah, no, we're doing this real early.
Yeah.
And we're just having everything, we're not gonna be rushed on any step of along the way. And also tell you that Kelly Reitma, have been working on our Transportation Improvement Board applications for 2020. They are due this Friday. They have all been submitted. So we have applied next year for additional overlays, additional chip seals, and another sidewalk project. And we will, so they're submitted. We will find out in November if we get any of those grants. And so those projects, if we're awarded any, will go on Island County's project list for next year, and they will be done in the late summer. Okay? All right. Commissioner Janet Sinclair stopped by my office this morning to let me know about an opportunity for a board. I meant to ask Kelly how to say this so I wouldn't be embarrassed, and I forgot to. Leaf one?
Yeah, I used to be on that.
What, how do you say
Lef.
It?
Lef.
Lef?
L-O-E-F-F, something like that.
L-O-E, I had the number of letters transposed.
L-E-O, it's Law Enforcement Officers and Firefighters.
Oh, I had it right. Just couldn't say it. Mm-hmm. So that is a board that meets once a month for 45 minutes, and the purpose of their meetings is to go over claims sent in by any of these firefighters, retired firefighters, and policemen who are still on this old program, retirement program, which Janet thinks there's like 13 people in the county that are left on this.
And 45 minutes is stretching it, I think, because I was on it for several years, and it's like 5-10 minutes. And some months there's no claims, and so it's, yeah, and our participation is, there needs to be a person on there from a town council, and it can be Oak Harbor, Langley, or us, and mm-hmm. it's just been us because it's right across the street, and it literally is 5-10 minutes.
Oh, is the reason why there's an opening because you just resigned?
I didn't resign. I was just on it a long time, and I just don't want to do it anymore. I guess I sort of did resign, although there was nothing official.
Oh, she didn't tell me that.
I didn't know it.
Now I'm thinking it's Oak Harbor's turn to do this.
Oh, man. I wouldn't want to have make anybody drive down.
5 minutes.
Okay.
5 minutes.
Well, so
Philly Beach to it.
The position. Well, it's got to be elected. Got to be elected. So if any of you are interested in that, so they always meet in the county? Okay.
She may not know that I was on it, because I had not have been not notified about a meeting for a long time.
I would imagine that maybe some less of the meetings are canceled if there's no claims. Okay. So yes, this person, this board that's open, board position that's open, is not necessarily to represent Coopville,
no.
but to represent all the municipalities in the county.
And
so,
there's really no, I mean, representing. You just literally, I mean, somebody might put in a claim that, you know, they got glasses and $15.20 of it wasn't paid, so they're billing this fund. I mean, that's...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's...
It's important work.
It is. Well, it is, sort of, I guess. And all these people come and...
Okay.
Well,
with that big endorsement from Jackie, if any of you are interested in this board position, you can contact Commissioner Sinclair, okay? Okay, now I'm going to stumble through this, and Jackie, Kelly and Owen, feel free to correct me. Okay, so there's a new substitute house bill, 1406, which is a new source of potential income for affordable housing solutions. And this money can be used to build and maintain affordable housing or to provide rental assistance. It is not a new tax, it is a redistribution of a teeny tiny percentage of sales tax. And so how counties and cities get this money to put towards affordable housing is they can get half of what they're allowed to get by doing nothing. They can get what?
By being a qualifying city. We have to have the some sort of program already in place or the additional tax in place in order to just get the half, and then we can request the second half.
Oh, okay. So you mean we have to go to election to even get the first half?
To even get the first half.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
To be qualified.
Okay.
Yep.
So to even get the first half of this tiny itsy bitsy bit of money, mm-hmm. we have to hold a special, it has to be voted on by the people in our town.
Oh, I don't think that's true.
We have to implement a tax that is to be used specifically towards the housing.
The county doesn't have to do that.
The county doesn't have to do
it. The county doesn't.
But cities do.
The cities do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we have to hold a special election in order to get it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And since we wouldn't be in an election cycle, that a special election for Coopville cost about $16,000.
What?
So
$16,000?
What?
What did you say?
$16,000.
Wow.
When we pay our portion of a regularly scheduled election, it's usually between $6,000 and $8,000.
Mm-hmm.
So Kelly went back to 2009. So for 10 years, she looked at our sales and use taxes, looked at what the percentage would be that we would get
mm-hmm.
if we held this special election.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last 10 years, only three of those years has the total amount we would get for that year even been above $1,000. So we would have to go 16 years to even pay for the election before we're ahead of the game. Now, what happens with your money if you don't claim it is it goes to your county,
mm-hmm.
which is a great solution for us yeah. since we partner with our county anyway
mm-hmm.
on all of our affordable housing funds and decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, all that is to just tell you that we were aware of the house of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly did the homework on it.
Mm-hmm.
We're recommending that we let our county have our money.
So what was it, Molly, 1406?
Yes, 1406.
Okay.
The Affordable Housing Sales Tax Credit.
And I believe if all of the municipalities in a county have the money go to the county, that amount increases.
Right, the county yeah. will get the full amount.
Right.
Otherwise,
without,
they only get half.
Without having to go to election.
Right.
So like the total, the town of Coopville would have, if we went out for a special election, the total the town of Coopville would have received in the last 10 years is $11,144, which we can't do much for housing with that amount of money. But if we can give that to the county with their larger amounts, we're leveraging our funds.
And the county's doing really good work in affordable housing.
So everybody good with that?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Kelly and Owen.
Absolutely.
Thanks for keeping us on our toes. Okay, just a couple quick things. I'm going to be taking a few days off, Friday, Monday, and Tuesday, and our wonderful Mayor Pro Tem, Rick Walty, will be around if you need anything. He is covering an important ribbon cutting event for me on Friday to move Chris Renfro and his Edward Jones office.
Yes.
He's moving from South Main to North Main to the newly remodeled building there. So that'll be fun. And then the only events coming up around in the area that I want to let you know about before our next meeting is the week of August 21st through the 25th, the plein air. Kind of painting, gala, and sale, two-day sale in the rec hall will be happening. That is a event co-sponsored by the Coopville Chamber of Commerce and the Pacific Northwest Arts Festival. So that's a fun thing. You'll be seeing painters around the reserve and around town, around the island, out in the open air painting, and then their works of art will be for sale in the rec hall. And that same weekend, the weekend of the 24th and 25th, is also the Whidbey Island Art Studio Tours. And you can get information on that from the Chamber website, I'm sure. That is all I have for my mayor's report. Does anybody have any questions?
No.
I'm new. Last time we took off the agenda, any amendment to the EPIC contract? Do you have any more information on that?
I have not chosen to amend that contract yet because I am still in kind of this limbo waiting game with the Navy to see how we're going to handle those easement negotiations. And I'm kind of just waiting to see, because if it's going to require additional money to the contract, I'd just like to do it all at once.
Yeah.
No work is taking place. EPIC isn't doing any work right now for us.
I knew you were waiting. I just didn't know if you heard anything.
Nope.
No, okay.
Nope, check on it weekly. Still no news. But thank you.
I just have to say one announcement from Metro Transit, because I know it's not tonight for
sure.
Our comments. I just, you know, with the transportation plan that the municipalities all have to do, Transit also has to do one of those, and I just wanted to let people know, if you're interested in what Transit's doing, it's on the Transit website.
Okay.
And they're, you can comment, or I know they're holding a couple of open houses or informational type things about it. So go on the website if you want to know what the plans are.
Thank you. Okay. This is our first opportunity for audience input. We are having a public hearing on draft ordinance 751 tonight regarding the transient accommodation code amendment. So you will have a chance to speak during that public hearing if that's what you're here to speak about. But if there's anybody else in the audience that would like to address the council about any other subjects, this would be your chance to do so. Ms. Eccles.
My name is Linda Eccles. I'm the director of the Coopville Chamber of Commerce, and tonight I'm also the vice president of the Coopville Festival Association. So, actually, on behalf of the Chamber and the Festival Association, we want to thank the town and staff most sincerely for some great support, and everything went so, so well. Kelly Reithmer was amazing. Mike asked me to really stress that. She was, even though she was leaving town, she was up there on Friday to make sure everything was okay and that they didn't need anything else. And I think it, you know, everything sort of really worked, everything gelled, everything really worked together. And it was a great festival, you know, despite the 4 hours of rain on Saturday morning. But as soon as the rain stopped, even though there were early shoppers, as soon as the rain stopped, everybody came out and the town was packed. And I think we, you know, we really did pretty well. Sort of, I haven't got the final numbers right now, but it's looking like we're making, you know, as much as we did last year. If not, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less. They're still working on all the final numbers on that. So that was really exciting. It was a good weekend and some great vendors. I mean, it really, everyone had fun attitude and it was all very good. Okay, I just wanted to let you know that the teardown and the putting up of all the tents and the tearing down, obviously Coopville Lions do a fabulous job. When the Navy came in at the very last minute, and they called me and said, hey, we heard you need volunteers. It was like, oh, someone up there loves us. But they tore down everything in the vendor parking lot on Sunday evening within just over an hour, which takes them normally about 3 hours to do, because they had so many volunteers step up and help. But you know, the Navy crew of 10 personnel really helped on Friday and Saturday as well. So that was really great. Just a reminder that the plein air gala tickets are going on sale, and they're $25, and we have them at the Chamber, or you can buy them online. But there's going to be wine and hors d'oeuvres, and then you'll be able to see all the beautiful work that the artists have done. We have 60 artists coming into town from all over, so that's very exciting next Wednesday. And so that's going to be, you know, that's another great event that we're having. And then also, lastly, we have State of the Town on September 17th. And it's going to be a Mexican evening, and so we're having some great Mexican food. And tickets will go on sale later this week. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. And that's a good opportunity for me to remind everybody who may not be a Chamber member or doesn't want to buy a ticket that after I do the State of the Town at the Chamber meeting on Tuesday the 17th, I do the exact same presentation the next night. Oh, no, that's the Lions. I do it at the Lions the next night. I'm going to know this puppy by heart. The next Tuesday, our meeting of the 24th at the town council. So that's an opportunity for anybody, any member of the public to be able to hear that. Okay? Okay. All right, that brings us to our presentation for the evening. We are very lucky indeed to have Superintendent Stephen King with us to tell us about, give us a little state of the schools or what they're looking forward to next year.
Awesome, thanks for having me, and thank you for your time, and you can decide if you're lucky after the presentation.
Okay, okay.
Better decide that.
We'll do that.
So thanks so much for having me. I want to introduce a couple folks as we get the technology up. So first of all, my traveling posse anytime I have tech is Will Smith, back in the back there. So there's Will, and yeah, Stephen King and Will Smith. And then my wife, my fan club is right there, Kelly. So fan club of one. So a couple things, just by way of introduction before I dive into the presentation. So kind of how did I end up in Coopville? So most of you know that I just finished my first year in Coopville as a superintendent. So actually my wife and I grew up in Friday Harbor, Washington, pretty nearby, small school district, kind of like this one, small town. And I ended up going into education. My wife actually, growing up with me, decided to marry me, which is a bit of a miracle. I taught at Mount Baker School District. I was a PE teacher and a social studies teacher, and I coached everything under the sun, as all beginning teachers did back then when you make about $22,000 a year and you have three children. So coached all kinds of stuff. After about 6 years of teaching, I got into administration, became the assistant principal at the high school, and then the principal at the high school at Mount Baker. After being the principal there for 10 years, I decided to become a superintendent. And I landed an assistant superintendent job at a district to the north called Oak Harbor. And it was there for a few years. And my wife and I were living there and loving it. My wife started actually working at Bavender Wind here in town. So she's been doing that the last few years. And we found every time we went out to eat or did anything, we ended up in Coopville. So we were always kind of eyeing Coopville. It felt so familiar to Friday Harbor where we grew up. The difference between Friday Harbor and here is this island has a bridge. So we've got the advantage on them. So when Coopville opened up last summer, it was just a natural for us to dive in here. We moved in up at Pennington Loop the night before school started, about 11 o'clock. We finished up, got into bed, started school, and it's been a whirlwind. We have a great time, but I love walking back and forth to work and being a part of the community. It's a great place, and my wife's loving it too. So thanks for some time tonight, and that's how we ended up in Coopville. It feels like home, so it's great. So when I got hired last summer, I remember talking with the school board, and I'm coming from Mount Baker. I spent most of my career in Mount Baker. As I said, we were always doing snow days. And so I was talking through as a superintendent how I would handle snow days in the school district. And one of the board members said to me, "You won't need to worry about that here. It never snows in Coopville." So so I took that last February and, of course, brought that back to the school board afterward as a quote, reminding them that it never snows in Coopville. I believe we had a record in the school district history of 5 snow days last year. I don't think I talked to all the historical folks here in Coopville, and nobody could name a year we had more than that. So we had quite our share of snow. So never say it never snows in Coopville. So that was a lesson learned. So that obviously is in Coopville, and that is obviously snow. When I arrived in Coopville, one thing I kept hearing over and over and over again is, "That's not Coopville," last summer. And I kept wondering, what is Coopville? And I put together a little test because I was trying to figure out. Donna Bailey works in my office. You probably know her. She's a Coopvilleite. You know, we got some local folks around here. And I kept saying, well, what is and what isn't Coopville? So I spent some time working on this last summer. And I actually put together a little quiz. And I'd like you to participate. As a town council, you should be able to pass a quiz. So when I put up the slides, I want you to be able to say either it's Coopville or not Coopville. Okay, so let's see how you do.
Not Coopville.
So far, so good.
Yay.
There you go. Good.
Boo.
You're doing great, even the boos. Wow. I didn't get that in the school district. They didn't boo coffee, that's for sure. Teachers like their coffee.
Yay.
Yeah, yeah, there it is. Okay. No. And I would never admit, since I moved to Coopville, to ever going to Costco, so it hasn't happened.
You can go there.
Can you?
We don't want one here.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
Yay.
Yeah. And I learned just an idiosyncrasy with this. When I first came to town, I was calling this Red Apple.
No.
That's a no-go. Then I tried Prairie Center. That actually didn't work so good for folks. Then I tried the PC. That wasn't even working, so it's PC.
Right.
With, especially with the high school kids, it's PC. They will let you know if you mess that up. So that's important.
Yes.
So that's a no-go, right?
Yes.
But that's a yes.
Yeah.
Okay, now this one I came up with. I actually did this presentation for my school staff at the beginning of last year. So this one actually was on my way to that presentation. Remember last late August, we had the smoke, see the smoke back there?
Yeah.
So I'm and of course, I'm sure somebody else was driving so I could snap that picture there. So I did that for my truck. The deer's right there. And then the next one is even better. Oh, not sure what happened there.
Too much smoke.
Tech guy, tech support.
Tech support.
Are we going to delay?
You guys were doing so good on the test, too.
Yeah. Now we lost our moment.
You were down to the last slide on it.
Well, at least he brought his own tech guy.
Mine.
He never leaves so much travel.
Living
up on Pennington, have you gotten used to all the deer up there?
Oh, yeah. One morning I was walking out, setting up my music on my phone, and I hadn't looked up. And as soon as I looked up, there was a deer literally this far from me. And of course, we both jumped.
Yeah.
Here it comes. It's hard to see though with the light on. I mean, I can see the light in it. It's hard to see the screen.
What's
good?
It's just upside down.
How do you
do
that?
There you go.
Okay.
Put your hand up next to it and it worked.
Yeah.
All right, so that's Coopville on my way to work, and then here's the next thing that happened.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And it happened when the light changed.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, unbelievable. And I witnessed it, took that, I thought that was fantastic. So only in Cooper.
Perfect.
So my start was a little interesting. So I got sworn in, that's me and the district office staff that we have. So the day I got sworn in, July 2nd last summer, I actually went into bargaining a half hour after getting sworn in. So I was sworn in at 9 a.m. and we went into bargaining with our teachers at 9:30.
Wow.
And of course, last summer was a historic year in teacher bargaining around the state with new money and everything else. So that was quite interesting. And then we hired all kinds of new folks. So as you look at the district office staff there, starting with me, to my left is Jamie Eason, my assistant. She's just starting. She was at the district office for less than a year when I came. Denise Pete, next to Jamie there, she's our business manager. She's been there about 6 years. Vicky with the red hair there, she's only been there about a year and a half. Andrea, I actually hired in September as our special services director. Will, you recognize there, he started about 3 months before I did. Sherry Roberts down below there is helping in special services. We actually hired her mid-year last year. And then of course, you know Donna Bailey down there on the bottom. She's been there about 6 years. But as you look at our district office team, we are extremely new. So if you ever wonder why we're making mistakes or doing things different, we may not know any different. So if you see something, give us a call. Because with our team there, we said, how did it used to happen? People look at each other and go, we have no idea. So we have a very different team, new team, but it all has brought a lot of energy and some new ideas. I started the year last year by reading the book Fish. If you've never read the book Fish, it's about the Pike Place Market. It's an excellent book. My belief is it's got to be a great place to work before it's a great place to learn. And this is a great little book if you're working on morale or things like that. It's about a 100-page book. And it's on the Pike Place Market, and our leadership team, school board, and some of our leadership teams in our schools read this book to kind of set the tone for my time here in Coopville of making sure it's a great place for everybody to work. The next thing is I started an action plan. Now, the reason superintendents create an action plan or an entry plan, the reason superintendents do entry plans is because everybody's nervous when a new superintendent comes in because they're afraid they're going to come in and change everything when they don't know anything about the town or the district. So when I came into Coopville, I created this entry plan in the summer, and essentially it was about listening, learning before leading. And I met with over 250 people, students, staff members, community members. Actually, Molly was one of the folks I met with last fall. And we actually came up with this idea there to maybe I'd come present here and she'd come to the school board sometime and present, kind of build our connections that way. So I asked...
Well, if you're in the state of the town, I'll know it by heart.
I love it. Yeah, you'll be well practiced. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I asked each person, including our students, four questions. And that was, what are the best things about Coopville? What are the most challenging things about Coopville? What do you expect of the superintendent? And then lastly, who else should I talk to? And that was how I built my 250 people to talk to. So I started with a few folks and just kept going. But it was very, very interesting asking those questions of folks, and you get some interesting answers, and sometimes they're to different things. So for example, with the parents, the most common thing was when you said what's best about Coopville is they said the best thing about Coopville is I always know what my kids are doing. If my kids do something wrong, somebody calls me, okay? The kids, on question two, what's the worst thing about Coopville? They said, the worst thing about Coopville is my parents always know what I'm doing. If I'm doing anything, I get my parents get called and they find out. So, you know, same answer, different question. But that is kind of part of being in a small town. So then the question after I finished the entry plan in December is, so what is the plan, Mr. King? What are you going to do here? So we created an action plan, worked with the school board to do this last January based on all the answers I got to that entry plan. You actually have one of those glossy sheets in front of you that has it. It is all about expanding connection in Coopville. The biggest theme that I saw when I interviewed everybody is we have a very supportive town, very supportive parents, probably the greatest I've seen in my career. It's unbelievable how much support we get. But people felt like the schools were kind of closed to the outside, that there was kind of a closed door. And that happens all over the place. School districts kind of close their doors and it's hard to get in, especially when you get into secondary. And listening to everybody and hearing everybody, I thought, what a great opportunity we have here to connect greater with our community. We have so many learning opportunities right here in Coopville, whether it's historic opportunities with the museum or the reserve, or even marine opportunities with our beaches and Penn Cove and everything else. Our library, we have the hospital. We have so many opportunities for our kids to learn right outside our doorsteps. So we are working on expanding those connections and getting more opportunities for our kids. Now people have asked me more and more, okay, what's that look like? So the best way, I found this about 2-minute video, which another district was doing this, and they call it place-based learning. It's kind of the instructional language for it, but I call it expanding connection because people actually understand that better. But here's a little short video on what this is, and Kelly, you'll have that volume on this.
When we think about schools, it usually evokes images of places separated from the larger community, places where students go to learn. A few public schools across the country are trying a different approach to engaging students in the learning process, using the communities and neighborhoods where students live as classrooms.
How do you know school family?
Because they have a lot of windows.
You don't want to not know about your neighborhood, because then you're not going to know where you're going.
You've got to take down the walls from the school and open the world to the student. What can we do as a classroom to create a new deal for our community?
I think that, you know, our school gives the community hope. They see us kind of as a beacon.
We would like to share some bread and jelly. We baked it ourselves at our elementary school.
We started our caring and sharing program when we made soup for the local hospice patients.
It's the school, actually, that you might say provides the glue, the cohesiveness that holds this town together.
The community was having a significant problem. Talking to the students is, we need to do something. And that's what really turned the community around.
The wonderful thing that we're going to do is be able to work with the community to do this. Habitat for Humanity.
The community and the school became a team. And our goal was to make the community and the school the most wonderful place to live.
One,
By getting students outside, we motivate them. I'm going to take this platelet and we're going to check it for E. coli.
It's really not easier. It's learning key concepts in different content areas through hands-on experience.
When students go out into the field, they see the problems that they're trying to address as real problems, and they don't really see them as math problems or science problems. The academic domains are seamless.
Kids are learning because they're having hands-on experiences.
This is one of the best experiences I've had in high school. It had me and my group interact with the entire community.
Our experiential approach to teaching not only led us to have the highest test scores, but this year we were awarded the Intel School of Distinction Award.
The kids are dreaming again of what they want to be. I want to be an astronaut. I want to be involved with science. I want to be an inventor.
And so what we want to do is to empower students to be able to know what is it that they should be allowed to have and let them know that they have a voice.
When our students leave Crow, and I hope they leave with the feeling that, given the opportunity, they can make an enormous difference in the world, change the world.
And I think based on our community feedback and everything else we've looked at with our school board, this is exactly the type of thing we need in Coopville for our kids. People often wonder what's unique about the Coopville School District, and this would be something that would be extremely unique about our school district. Also, there's so many advantages to this place-based or project-based learning where kids are more engaged. You know, your typical classroom is usually just for the kids who are really good at sitting in desks for an hour and doing their work, rather than getting outside and doing things. It's also good for their health. It's good for everything else. Jackie, you can leave it off. I'm going to keep going. I'm almost done, but not quite. So anyway, I would just say that I think there's so many advantages to it, including health and mental health, getting kids out of the classrooms and off devices. So anyway, more to come on that, but I wanted to give you a few examples of some stuff we're already doing with this. Oh, we lost it again.
You know, Steve, years ago, the district did have something like that. I don't remember what it was called. When my sons were there, because I know one of my sons did this great project with the National Park Service.
Mm-hmm.
And he was out on Eby's Landing, like, every morning for I don't know how long, counting crabs.
Yeah.
Little crabs. And then he did this big study with the National Park Service. And it was incredible what... what they had some of the students doing.
Absolutely.
It was a pretty small program, so I'm thrilled that you're going to be doing something like that again.
Yeah, and we're looking to do it K through 12.
That's wonderful.
You know, getting kids out and in the community and doing different things and projects and things. So many things they can learn from that. So, looks like it's coming. If it doesn't, I can wing through it without it. There it is. Look at that.
That was worth waiting for.
I guess so, yeah. So a couple examples of some things we're already doing to connect, and I hope you like the picture, to build those deeper connections with our community. So first of all, when I came here, we have a great farm-to-school program, and that's a couple. That's Svi. That's a carrot, but that's Svi inside of the carrot. And so he is actually a farm-to-school employee. And our community does a great job of supporting farm to school. And then next to him is Elaine, who actually was an AmeriCorps worker this year with us. And they're actually hiring another AmeriCorps as Elaine left us. So we'll be getting another one. But so we had that in place already. And as I looked at our school cafeteria and everything we're doing, we just saw an incredible opportunity to partner and work on that community connection. So we hired an Austrian master chef. Mm-hmm. Who happened to own Christopher's for the last 17 years. Now, I have gotten a couple complaints about this from some of the parents, but none from the kids. Okay. And actually not the parents, but some of the other folks who like to frequent Christopher's.
Yeah.
But this is actually really exciting for the students and something Andreas and I started talking about last fall. And when we saw this opportunity with farm to school and all these local farms and everything else, we said, why are we working with a national vendor and feeding our kids all this processed stuff? Why not just dive in with this? And Andreas is with us. We also hired Laura Lubinville from the county. And she's fantastic, and the two of them started with us this summer, and we are so excited about what they're already doing. He brought me in a vegetarian chili the other day, and he was just tuning it in. And he said, Steve, do you think this is any good? And he brought it in, and he was so worried, and I tasted it, and I said, that is so superior to anything we've ever had in this school. It's just unbelievable. So really exciting stuff. We're going to be, one thing you might be interested in, about every month to 6 weeks, we're going to be having community dinners at the school, where Andreas and his staff will cook for the community. People will come in. Obviously, it'll be a charged dinner, but you'll eat there in the cafeteria, and then that'll help fund our local procurement, because obviously that's more expensive than working with the national vendor. So anyway, that'll our first one, I believe, is September 26th. I can do a follow-up email. We're going to do it before a football game, so people can come and eat and then go out to a game afterwards if they want. We're going to do it in front of concerts and other things like that down the road. So really good way. Again, the food program is connecting with our community's values, but also a great way to bring our community into the schools. So some of the examples of what we're doing. Another example of some things we started this year is better communications. So I gave you a copy of our one of our newsletters up there. That's two we did. Will was a big help on these things. When I came in, we had pretty outdated communications with our community. Lots of text and writing and not a lot of pictures. People resonate and connect with pictures. And when you have pictures and then some writing with it, they tend to remember more, and it has more value than, and it actually gets picked up off the coffee table than something just in writing. So we started that this year, kind of almost rebranding the district, and we call it the Connect, because we want to connect with our people. Another thing we did at the start of the year, but I just want to point out, we actually did our first day, we handed out pencils to every kid that walked into the school district, P through 12, preschool and up, and they say Coopville loves their kids. And I think it's really important that when our kids walk into their school, they feel loved by their staff and their community. So we had a huge, that's just a portion of the folks who came out and supported us with handing out pencils to our kids. That was such a big hit. We're going to do that again this year. And in fact, this year we're going to throw in a shirt, too, that I'll show you here in a second, that we'll have our community greeters wear as they hand this out. But we have such great community support, Lions Club, our community foundation, our farm to school, our booster club. So many folks are big supporters of the district, and this was just a day where we had the opportunity to really enjoy that. A couple other things going into this year is we really want to focus on our history. So the history of Coopville is something that I'm going to start with at the beginning of the year and how that applies to staff. So if you look at any of our things, we have a new Facebook page, and if you go on there, you'll see some pictures of some of our past schools, like this one from 1913. The other thing you're going to see this year is this shirt. So this is actually a size 2X, so this would be like a nightgown for some folks. But this is the shirt, 1901 school that opened, with the kids in front of it. And we're gonna give this to our entire staff at the beginning of the school year. And then they're gonna wear these on the first day of school, and then our community greeters, we're gonna ask to wear these as well. And then this will be a shirt that'll be worn around through the school district throughout the year. So really trying to focus on our history and then how that applies to our work now as we learn about the history of Coopville. The other thing we really wanna focus on this year, and this is kind of a challenge, especially in schools, is loving each and every child. And I'm not afraid to say the love word when it comes to kids. We need every single child that walks into our school district to feel like a welcomed guest who is loved in our school district. And that is extremely important to me. And school is a place where often there are the kids who are honored and praised and congratulated, and then there are the other kids. And I hate to even say that. And I actually heard a few times in my entry plan, they just aren't Coopville kids. And so I have banned that in our school district, that we will never say that, because every single child that walks into the Coopville community and walks into our doors is going to be loved and accepted and cared for and celebrated for who they are, no matter what their background is or what their home life is like or anything else. So that's a big focus that we are going to have this year, is making sure we love every single child. And those are deep conversations, because we have a lot of things, whether it's culturally or other, that we do without even realizing it, when it comes to our students, that is turning those students off and making them feel uncomfortable, whether it's just them sensing our frustration with their behavior, or us assigning all kinds of homework to a child that goes home and doesn't have a place to do homework and doesn't even have home life setting for homework. So how do you navigate that? Not saying you don't do homework, but those are conversations we need to have about how are we gonna love each and every child and give them all the same opportunities, no matter what their background or their experience is at home. One more thing that's coming your way and we're starting to work on is we are likely to be running a bond in February of 2022, and the bonds would actually take over the retiring bonds, which run out in January of 2023. So the tax rates when we do that will actually stay, I mean, it's early, but they'll actually stay pretty much the same, might slightly up, slightly down, whatever. But the biggest thing we need to address in our district is that elementary school. We don't know. We're going to be doing a study and survey this year, which is basically an outside group that has architects and those kind of things. And they come in and look at your school building and all your property, and they say, you can renovate, you should rebuild, or you should build a new site or whatever. So we don't really know where that's going to go, but we're in that kind of study and survey phase. But kind of know that about 3 years down the road, we're going to be taking this to the community and looking at what do we do with the elementary school, and certainly we'll involve the community in that decision as we go forward with that. But I wanted that on your radar for the town, because that will be coming over the next few years. A couple other things just for you to be aware of. So budget is really tight in the school district, and I don't know if you ever hear from a school district administrator that ever says the budget is not tight. The budget's always tight. It's really hard to explain right now, and this would be probably a separate 30-minute presentation on why the budget's tight right now, because it's so confusing, because we just had the McCleary decision just over a year ago where schools were given more money. And it's a again, it's about a 30-minute presentation, but the short way I can describe it is people were waiting and waiting and waiting for more money, and as soon as more money came, it was like the piñata breaking. That's the best analogy I have, and the candy hit the floor, and everybody dove on it. And when they first, that's my second to last slide, so that's okay. The easiest way to describe this is when the legislature decided to do McCleary, they had capped the teacher pay raises to 3.1% that year, okay? In July of last summer, when the bargaining started and everything else and everybody was vying for that extra money, the legislature and OSPI backed off and said there is no cap on teacher raises. So what ended up happening is most of the McCleary money went towards staff salaries and raises, and not towards other things like special education and enrichment and all the other things that McCleary was originally for. So it was supposed to be for, yes, increased salaries, but it was also supposed to be for all kinds of other programs. And superintendents and school boards lost their leverage when the legislature came and said, there is no cap on teacher pay. And then it was, that's why we had all those strikes last year and everything else. And why now you see, even though districts got more money last year, you see a lot of districts who are in a lot of money trouble. And we're really tight right now, so just kind of pay attention. We are cutting back on a lot of things. We actually cut back on staff and some different things. And that can be confusing for folks when we just got more money. But that's the short reason why. Again, there's about 25 more minutes on that. If you ever want to give me a call, you can come on down. I'll talk to you about it. School safety's all, there we go. School safety's always a big one, especially the last several years with what's going on in our nation, and we're always working on safety. We have a safety task force. We're working very, very hard on that. One other thing for the town to know, as soon as we have more money in the budget, one of the things I really want to work on is signs at the school district. We need better signage around the school district, and that is linked to safety, because when you have people wandering around campus not knowing where the office is or where a school is, you start to have people, all of a sudden, that becomes the culture. And so when people are wandering around your campus, you don't even think twice, because of course they're just lost, and just, you know, kids just kind of roll with it. So we really need to work on our safety along with the signs, and of course that's a budget issue. But we're doing a lot of other things with safety, such as video cameras in our school, and we have kind of a see something, say something, where kids have an app on their phone and they can just send it in to their principal. We're doing a lot of things with social media. There's so much around social media that causes safety issues or bullying or harassment issues and other issues for our kids. So another big issue that we're working on. The last thing I'll finish with and then give you, just to remind you, okay, remember it never snows in Coopville, okay? Remember that. That was the day I woke up. I got called by my transportation director at 4 a.m. There wasn't an inch of snow, not even a flake at my house. And it was about 36 degrees. And he said, there's 4 inches down here in Green Bank. And I said, you gotta be kidding me. And he said, yep. So I drove down, and that was actually on one of the roads. There was a tree across the road. So I took pictures and put them on Facebook to prove to our parents that, yeah, we did have a snow problem. So we had a late delay that day, even though the town of Coopville had nothing. So very interesting year. So they're breaking me in this year, my first year. So, all right, what questions might you have? And I know I probably went over, sorry, tech issues and everything else.
When's the first day of school?
It is the day after Labor Day, which is September 3rd. And if any of you want to join us as community greeters, just give me or Jamie, my assistant, a call or an email, and we'd love to have you. If you want to come get the shirt's $7. So
could you hold that up again? Because it was
A little dark then, wasn't it? And black and white shirts don't show up well in the dark.
Nice.
So just a white, simple shirt. But Rick Whittison from the Community Foundation put these together for us. So it's a pretty cool little shirt. And I thought, man, that really celebrates the history of Coopville, which is really something we want to do. And we really want to recognize that. We want to recognize our, for lack of a better term, old-timers. You know, my grandpa was an old-timer in Freddie Harbor, and I think that those people, we have so much to learn from them and so much respect we can show for them. So we want to do that and then apply that to our work in the school district.
Well, I want to commend some of your teachers, Sarah Boying.
Yeah.
She partnered with my day job, the Land Trust, and we did a great field trip. People, the volunteers and my staff, were so excited. They loved having 60 fourth graders from Coopville out there.
Yep.
And they had, you know, the kids were interacting with the land. And
yeah, that's great.
And we want to do more of that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you. Yeah, that's great for the kids too. It's incredible.
And you know what really impressed us is the kids drew pictures, colored pictures, sent us cards, and wrote in them.
Oh yeah.
And they were so charming.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it was just, I mean, we handed them out at our board meeting and were reading them out loud. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
Well, it's a win-win. The kids love it too, the parents love it, and there's so much learning that happens there. So, yeah. And it's right in our backyard, so why wouldn't we? Yeah.
Thank you. That was really informative.
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate it.
A lot of new good stuff. A lot of new energy.
Yeah, thanks.
And I don't have any questions, but I have had the honor of knowing Steve for several years in my paying job, news assistant superintendent at Coopville. And I'll tell you, there was a whoop and a holler that went out when I heard you were hired over here. I'm thrilled because it's
thank you.
It's my district. And,
thanks.
I'm thrilled that you're there and hear nothing but really positive things. I have a couple staff that work up there. And
yep.
Provide some mental health help, and they are thrilled. With your
mental health is certainly near and dear to my heart, and it's impacted my own family, and so I have a real heart for those kiddos who struggle with that, and we need to do everything we can to help them. So I've certainly enjoyed working with you, Jackie, in both districts, but more in Coopville,
Coopville, yes. I'm thrilled you're here, and I'm thrilled with the change. I can't wait to see how the food program goes. I hope we can get an update on that.
Oh, I'm excited. Hey, come on down and eat.
Yeah.
So really, I mean, I believe high school lunch is at 11:50, so we're wanting to open it to adults, and we have those community dinners. We'll put it out on Facebook and everything. Please come on down and join us. So, yeah. And it's good for the kids. My wife and I are planning to go in once in a while and eat with the kids. I think it's really good. So,
excellent.
A lot of positives. So.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate
welcome
it.
Welcome to Coopville. Glad we could get you before the school year started. And
yeah, me too. But I will say, this is the nicest I've dressed in a long time. It's good practice. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to just take a few minute break to let them get packed up. Maybe we won't take that long.
Thank you.
Ready, Kelly?
I am. Bring it on.
So the next item on our agenda is a public hearing for draft ordinance 751, transient accommodation code amendment, possible code amendments. I am going to just procedurally remind the council that they asked to have the public hearing this evening and have the opportunity to hear anybody who may want to speak to us. We didn't really know whether that would happen or not, and so we will not be taking action on this ordinance this evening. We had decided in advance to put it on our next council agenda to actually take action. You have the option when our hearing is over, if you would like to choose to, after the hearing is over tonight, the public oral public comments will be over, but you can choose to leave the written record open until our next meeting if you so choose. And then another thing to invite you, to remind you, is that we will be hearing from staff and we will be hearing from the public, and you are welcome to ask the staff or the public any questions, clarifying questions you may have, but we need to keep the council deliberations for the next meeting. Okay? Does that kind of make everything as clear as mud? Okay. With that, I am opening the public hearing for draft ordinance 751. Is there anybody on the council that could have possible conflict of interest or appearance of fairness issues?
Nope.
Okay. So we are going to start out with our town planner, Alan Dennison, making a staff report.
Thank you, Mayor Hughes, and good evening, council members. So this, as council is well aware, has been a long time in coming. A lot of effort has been put in, both by the council as well as the planning commission. Staff believes that the town council's express policy that you wanted to see reflected in this draft legislation has been incorporated. That policy direction really responds to a fairly fundamental idea of what you want, what community is and where you would like this community to be, what you would like this community to be now and in the future. This was last discussed by the town council at its July 23rd meeting, and there were some requests for consideration of several areas and some changes, and I would like to walk you through the changes that have been made since that last meeting. One of the important ones is in at the tail. It's at the bottom of the summary and in section 8 of the ordinance, which provides for a repealer of the current moratorium. So according to this ordinance, the current moratorium will be rescinded simultaneous with the effective date of the legislation. As directed at the last meeting, that effective date has been put into the ordinance at December 1st of 2019. So the first change is on page 4, and this is was from a discussion of adjacent and the concern with code. Small wording changes are very important. I thought this was a very good comment. So that the definition of adjacent, which used to be a definition of adjacent property, has been just changed to adjacent, and that is a condition of a property being next to or across a right-of-way or easement from another property. The next one is on page 11 at the top. There was a suggestion that we include a definition of guest room, and that has okay. That did not make it into this draft. There is a definition of
yep.
Yes, there. Right at the top of page 11.
Yeah. What, a guest room?
Yeah.
You must have an old one. Do you want my copy, Owen?
I'm sorry. I apologize. I have the old one for reference.
Do you want mine?
Which didn't. No, thank you. I have it as well. Which oh. didn't have it.
We're all staring at you going, what?
Yeah. That isn't mine. Yes, there it is. Yep. Where it's supposed to be. So we now have a definition for guest room on page. So in, starting on page 21, we have the land use tables, and that as it was proposed, bed and breakfast inns, the citation for listing for bed and breakfast inns and short-term rentals referred to chapter 1610 of the town code, which had additional regulations, and as was pointed out, there are other land uses identified in these tables that are also have additional associated regulations. So the request was to note those regulations or those land uses that were separately regulated in 1610, which has been done for each of the zones. Staff on page 22. Under medium density residential, this was just a correction. No, I take it back. That was on. Yes. So there was a correction under duplexes. The citation was duplexes on lots greater than 15,000 square feet. That is, from a user standpoint, that's fairly misleading because. The reference is it applies to all duplexes, and the reference in 1610 applies to provides that additional clarification. We don't do it for other uses that are listed. Provide that additional regulation on page. On page 26, under transient accommodation, there was a question as to why we were repeating the definition in the body of the section, because it is already defined in our definition section in the same title. Staff gave that some further consideration and believe there is merit to removing it. It is superfluous. There are many terms that are used throughout the code that do require one to go back to the definition section in 1604, and this is clearly one of them. So that, if you have any concerns about that, please let me know. Next one then is on page 27, and also on page 28, in the first regulation for both bed and breakfast inn and short-term rental, there are, it states that evidence of operation includes a number of number of indicators, and there was a request that it say includes but is not limited to, so that has been added. On page 28, as well, there was a question as to what the date should be for legally established uses, and that was staff had initially used the date when the first moratorium went into effect, but there was a question as to how this would affect those non-conforming uses that are required to show that they have been a license has been applied on an annual basis. Just to show that they have not been abandoned. And given that, it made more sense to start to use the legally established date as the date that these regulations became effective, which would be the start of that two-year cycle during which a non-conforming owner of a non-conforming short-term rental would need to apply for a license. Next one is on page 30, and this is not actually a change. I take it back. It is a change. There was a this is on under 536040A12, proof of building fire inspection within 5 years of application. It now says 5 years prior to application to clarify that we're looking retrospectively with that. There was also a request that staff contact Central Whitby Fire to see how they felt as an organization about 5 year intervals for full fire inspections. I spoke with Charlie Smith and he had no concerns about it. Again, if it is the council's wish, we can make that an annual requirement. There is a without second guessing the importance in terms of public safety, there's a resource issue. It may well be our building official that does those inspections, and we have limited time with our building official, who is with us half time or a little less than half time. So if you're comfortable with that, we'll keep it at 5 years, and then again on the intervening 4 years would require a self-inspection or self-certification signed by the owner. The next one is on page 33, and this is not a change. This was just an error that will be corrected on the final. This is under a new, going through it, we have this section is for the short-term rental business license, and under the bed and breakfast in business license, there was a definition of licensee, which is an important term within the context of these chapters, and there was no definition for it. So cleverly, I took the definition directly from bed and breakfast in, and without changing bed and breakfast into short-term rental. That has been corrected, but is in error in this version. And on page 35, at the bottom, there's, as I noted, the new Section 8, termination and repeal of the moratorium. Moratorium will be lifted simultaneous with the effective date of these regulations, or with this ordinance. And on page 36, under Section 10, it provides the effective date of December 1, 2019. Those are the changes that have been made since the 23rd. I would note that I'm sure you have noted that a great deal of the 95 pages of the staff report and attachments were the public comments that have been received, and we have received quite a few. On your dais this evening, I put two more from Holly and David Grayson and from Diane Binder to add to that public record. If you wish to leave the public record open, as the mayor noted, that is an option for you. If people have additional comments, they could make them, or you could close the record entirely, absorb what has been offered in terms of public comment to date prior to your deliberations at the next meeting. And that concludes this presentation.
Is it appropriate to ask a question right now?
Please do.
Okay. You pointed out on page 30 the fire inspection.
Okay, Catherine? Yeah, I'm going to interrupt you for a minute. We're going to follow the public hearing format, which means we're going to take and comment from the public first, and okay. then we'll have an opportunity to ask okay. questions of Owen and the public
all right.
at the same time, okay? Thank you. Okay, in this case, the applicant is the staff, so this is the opportunity during the public hearing to invite anybody from the public who would like to address the council. If there is anybody, please step up to the microphone and state your name and address. Oh.
Really?
Wow. Okay. Then that public comment opportunity is over, Comment letters are acknowledged, so Owen's already done that. The two additional ones we've received in addition to the very large packet you already have. Okay. Catherine, now it is the chance, time for the town council to ask questions.
This is just on page 30, number 12, under A, when you're saying the proof of building fire inspection within 5 years prior to application. But on page 33, at the bottom, under 8A, it still says within 5 years. First line of 8.
Thank you. It was intended to be consistent.
So that'll be changed to prior also over?
Prior, correct.
Good catch, Catherine.
Oh, I have my proofreading hat tonight.
Okay, does anybody have any questions of Owen?
I do. On the two comments that you handed us today, one of them from Holly and David Grayson talked about making sure that the license application fee is appropriate to, you know, to make sure we can enforce the regulation. Do we have we set that?
We have not. Okay. That will have to come back during the next 4 months, 5 months, as a an amendment to our fee resolution. We'll need to adopt that.
I appreciated their thought on this. I mean, they are an operation that's legally established, and they're saying, make sure you charge us enough, you know, in these business licenses to take care of that additional workload. So, the other one was from Diane Binder, and about making sure that bed and breakfast inns would be paying commercial water and sewer rates.
Oh, thank you. And I discussed this with Ms. Beach, and it was determined that there would actually be, and she can speak to this probably better than I can, there would be no difference. That our commercial rates are for those commercial institutions that have a higher BOD for the sewers, and these would function essentially as single-family homes for the most part, and we do not have a commercial water rate, correct? So,
that's great. Thank you.
We look into it.
Are there any other questions for our planner?
Good job.
It's a great work on the job.
Is there a downside to keeping the public comment open for another week?
The written record?
The written record in 2 weeks.
Is there what a downside?
Yeah. I mean, you're asking if we should do it for another couple of weeks.
It is. The only reason we raised the question is because it would be a little different from standard practice. Typically, the public hearing and the adoption is the same night.
Right.
Once the public hearing is closed, that's an end of the opportunity for public comment. But since you are considering it, mulling this for several weeks, it seemed appropriate to at least entertain the idea of allowing people to provide more comment.
If you want. Now, when Owen has sent this draft out last week to all the parties of record, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And it's been noticed in the paper, how many times is it?
Twice
this public hearing has been. And then for our next meeting, it will just be noticed like a regular agenda item, and it will be listed on an agenda item. So it's up to you if you want to keep the written record open for the next 2 weeks.
Personally, I think that we should close it. This has gone on almost a year, and we've had, like you said, two public hearings, and it's well known by pretty much everybody. So it just, I don't know if that would affect anything, a final decision, if we kept it open for written comments or not. So to me, I think we should just close it. It's gone on quite a while, and we need to move on with this. That's my personal
opinion. I'm glad to agree with Rick.
Okay. Okay, then I am closing the public hearing. And we, no public comment, either verbal or written, will be taken after this evening. And we will take action on this ordinance at our next council meeting. Sound good?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, Owen, thank you very much for all the detailed work on this.
And especially for attaching all of the public comments, because they tend to get lost, you know, month to month.
You know, it was very interesting. I missed the last meeting because I was on vacation and I was down in Oregon. And it's just amazing to me how many towns and small places are struggling with this same issue as a ban.
And we should talk about that in our deliberations next week.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's just, it's everywhere. I mean, every place is struggling.
Mm-hmm. Well, in addition to thanking Owen, I'd like you to thank the Planning Commission because they did a lot of groundwork before we ever saw it. They must think, well, that was a long time ago.
And I think it's important to note that there was a significant shift in how short-term rentals are handled in residential neighborhoods, but the vast majority of the ordinance is as they recommended it. So I think they have much to feel very proud about in their work on this as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Okay, we only have one item of new business to take action on, and that is to set our first council budget workshop. We checked all of our calendars, and we came up with a date of August 21st from 4 to 8 in the rec hall. Seemed to work for everybody's calendar, and so if somebody would make a motion to set that workshop, that would be great.
I move to set the budget workshop for Wednesday, August 21st, from 4 to 8 p.m. in the rec hall.
Second.
Moved and seconded to set our first budget workshop for August 21st, 2019, 4 to 8 in the rec hall. I will just let you guys know that I am going to invite Kelly Rietma and Joe Grogan to the beginning of that meeting, because we will be discussing our capital improvement plan, which is basically all of their projects, and they've been working on that. We've been working on that as staff, and so they will be letting you know what the lists look like and the priorities, and we will be discussing other discretionary fund spending at that meeting. Does anybody else have any discussion on that? I will also be inviting Jenny Bright to that workshop. You're invited.
Thank you.
So I don't want to jump the gun, but is this a good time to decide when we want to do the October one, or should we wait?
Nope, we're going to do that in discussion next. All those in favor of setting a council workshop for August 21st, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passed unanimously. Thank you. Okay, you all received staff reports from staff. They have been very busy. These were actually, since we canceled the first meeting in July, their staff reports kind of cover June and July. And as you can see by their reports, they are very busy. They're doing a lot of good work for the community. Does anybody have any questions or comments about their reports? Nope. Okay. So the next item is a discussion item on the 2020 budget calendar and the policies and priorities. We are bringing these as a discussion tonight with your calendars, and then we'll vote on these at the next meeting, Kelly?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So a lot of these dates on the... Kelly, do you want to talk about this? The calendar?
Sure, sure.
Okay.
Many of the things that happen during the budget process are directed, the timelines for them are directed by the state. There's RCW that says that we have to have certain things done by certain days of the year, actually, when we have our passing our annual budget. The dates that I've put on this calendar meet all those RCW requirements and coincide with council meetings wherever possible. The only date that is still unknown is the council workshop in October. So by RCW, the mayor needs to share with the council the draft budget by October 7th, but she can do that via email. And we have historically had a budget workshop right around that period of time to go over the draft budget with the council. So we're going to need some dates from council on when we can meet there. There's not a whole lot of flexibility in the calendar. We are required to pass the budget by the end of December. We traditionally cancel the last meeting in December because it's usually Christmas. We put in our budget calendar that we're going to pass our budget by the end of November to give us one more extra meeting in case we need it, and that way we still meet the RCW. So this calendar meets all of our legal requirements for passing the budget and gives us a little bit of wiggle room in case something happens and we have to do a little bit of rearranging. I'll be bringing the budget calendar and the priorities and policies back to the council at the next meeting to hopefully have the council's approval that this meets your expectations. There are a couple of changes I am proposing in the policies. One of them happens every year when we do our rate study. We change our allocations on our admin costs that we charge our utilities. I don't know what that percentage will be until we do our rate study. We'll be doing it later this month. So all those percentages will be changing, and that's going to be on the first page of the allocation policies here. I'm also proposing we take public works out of the mix. That has always been the engineer costs. We don't have a staff engineer anymore. We have a contract engineer, which means all of the expenses that are tied to our utilities are actually charged directly to the utilities, since it's not a staff position anymore. So there's no reason it would be a zero. It would just be extra work for no reason to include public works. There's nothing will happen there. And the other change that I'm proposing is to just update our staffing chart to include that the engineer is a contracted position. The council went through the policies and priorities. We spent a lot of time actually last year in a budget workshop working on these. And unless the council feels there's some things that need to be changed, there isn't anything that I think needs to be changed. There's nothing that's come down. There's no advice been given from MRSC or any other organization that says you should be looking at changing any part of this. So I'm comfortable with it, and I propose that we only make those changes. But it's up for discussion. So.
Okay, so jumping back to the calendar, mm-hmm. So that date that we don't have a date for a council workshop in October to go, and that will be the first review as a group of the draft budget, the actual O&M for all of the different funds. As Kelly said, our state requirement is to get that draft budget to you by October 7th. Since Kelly has to get the draft budget to me mm-hmm. by October 1st, mm-hmm. I'm thinking that we could shoot that out to you, you know, on the 2nd or the 3rd later, you know, that week, so you would have time to look at it if you choose. So I kind of look at this as we have two options. I know we like to set up workshops in weeks that are not, we don't have a council meeting, so we could either you could get it and not have a chance to look at it, really, and we could set a workshop for Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, the 2nd, 3rd, or 4th. Or what Kelly and I would like to propose is that right now we schedule a council workshop on Tuesday, the 8th, which is a normal council meeting. And as we get closer to that date, if we find that we have business that absolutely has to be taken care of, we can do that as long as we post it on the agenda ahead of time. Otherwise, it would just be a council workshop. I see a lot of nodding of the head. You guys like the October 8th?
October 8th this works very well for me. We're going to be leaving with the next day for 10 days, so the 8th would...
I like the previous week because I'm gone.
Oh,
you're gone on the 8th?
No, the week before.
Oh.
Do you like the 8th too?
Yeah. Okay, so would you... okay, so this will be a workshop, and you know, this workshop, this one can last a while. Do you want to start at 6:30, or would you like to start at 4?
Let's start at 4.
At a different location, and we'll have to give you a... We'll find a location, I'll let you know. Does 4 work for everybody?
I think so, yeah.
Excellent.
So we're not going to have a council meeting, but we might have something to pass after somewhere along that.
Yeah. And if we have any action to take, then it will be listed as a, you know, as a regular council meeting agenda with an action item. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't pay bills that meeting, so we'll just have to see how it goes. Okay, that's wonderful. Okay, and then Mike brings up an interesting subject that on the November 26th date, where it's our final public hearing, and it is the adoption of our budget. November 26th this year is 2 days before Thanksgiving. Mike knows right now that he will be out of town. And since it is a holiday week, we have to really make sure we have a quorum by the end of November to pass that. So I know, does anybody happen to know, like Mike does already, that they will be gone that week, the 2 days before Thanksgiving?
I'll be here. Yeah, I have no idea, but I think I will be.
Sometimes I go away, but maybe not this year.
I just don't plan that far ahead.
Okay, so we don't have a guarantee quorum. So if you guys, if Catherine and Jackie, if you make plans, you need to let us know right away.
We can pass it the first meeting in December.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be at this November 30th meeting. And this calendar, even when I bring it back to council, and if this calendar is approved, it's okay if it gets pushed to December. I mean, okay. Things happen. Yeah.
So that would be December 10th.
Mm-hmm.
And that's December 10th, and that we just have to be done by the end of December?
We just have to have the budget passed by the end of December,
okay.
Right? So we could hold a special meeting at any time.
Okay,
so
we could hold a special meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll deal that as we get closer, but keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Okay, that answers our question on the calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody have any comments or suggested changes for the budget policies and allocations or anything? We made, Kelly would remind you that we made several changes. We've made some big changes to the budget policies over the last year or two.
Mm-hmm.
We've created some ending BAP funds, and we really looked at these closely and have made some changes, so not a lot to recommend this year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? All right, so we will bring those back for action item next time. The last thing, very last thing on our agenda is an opportunity for audience input.
I should have told you the first time. Linda Eccles, Cookeville Chamber of Commerce. End the evening on an even happier note. I heard today that the port got the money from the county to proceed with the wharf, saving the wharf. So
they got the full amount they asked for?
The full amount they asked for.
Really?
So that's really exciting. So we're going to see a lot of movement out there, pardon the pun, but good movement. Good movement. So that, Chris said that will be happening straight away. I actually forwarded an email to you today.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Before you close, I will be out of town on September 24th.
Okay. September, thank you for telling me. I just want to know that in advance, September 24th. I'm going to miss my state of town.
I'll watch it on video.
That'll be mesmerizing. Anybody else know any holidays? Okay, excellent. We are adjourned.